Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Stowe Cider, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Let's Grow Kids, The Alchemist Brewery, and by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week talking about gun safety, the movement that really was catalyzed in 2018 by yet another school shooting, this one in Parkland, Florida, which resulted in the deaths of 17 students, but also triggered a mass movement led by high school students around the country who walked out of classes, marched on Washington, demanded change, and won it. We are talking about gun safety now in a way that we did not even a year ago. And here in Vermont, of course, gun safety legislation was passed last year and backed by Governor Phil Scott, who had just a few months earlier opposed any such legislation, saying he thought Vermont's gun safety laws, or lack of them, were perfectly adequate. One of the leaders here in Vermont in trying to win legislation and last year succeeding is Senator Philip Baruth. He's a state senator from Chittenden County. Senator Phil Baruth, welcome back to the Vermont Conversation.
Good to talk to you, David.
Maybe we could just have you recap what was passed in Vermont last year. What are the relatively new gun safety laws that we now have in the state?
We passed, I think, five separate measures in a couple of different bills. There were restrictions on purchasing guns for 21 years and younger, unless you had a hunter safety course. There were restrictions on high-capacity magazines, and there were also universal background provisions written into law. Then on the side of preventing domestic violence, we passed an extreme risk prevention order bill that allowed a red flag bill, it's so-called, that allows authorities to remove guns from a situation where it seems as though harm to an individual might be imminent.
And when you talk about guns now being purchased at the age of 21, it had been age 16 prior to that. Is that right?
You could give a gun to somebody at pretty much any age. In terms of traditional hunting and fishing, that made sense. But we're obviously in a different national moment with mass shootings in schools, bars, places of worship, malls, and many of them committed by young people with ready access to weapons.
So now tell us about what is being proposed, what you're proposing here in 2019 for new gun safety legislation.
So I was proposing and still have on the table three different measures. One is a waiting period of 48 hours to purchase a weapon. The next piece is called safe storage. And what it says is that if you own a gun and it is not in your immediate possession, it must be unable to be fired. That is, it has to be locked up, or it has to have the firing pin removed, or have a gun lock on it. And then the third piece speaks to 3D printing of guns. Obviously, if you can print a weapon in your living room, you do an end run around the universal background check system, which we passed after 5 years of effort, and with lots of help from Gun Sense, I should mention, and Clay Lasher Summers. I know you'll be speaking with her. We finally passed that measure, but if somebody hit print and go around that system, it makes a mockery of universal background checks.
How can you limit what people print on their home 3D printer?
Well, so this is patterned on a law in New Jersey, and it has two parts. One says it's illegal to print the gun. The other says it's illegal to distribute the blueprints for the guns. That last piece is obviously the most subject to litigation. And so it's with the understanding that that piece could conceivably be struck down, but it is severable from the other piece. So the ban on printing a gun, I think, is on much firmer legal ground.
And what has Governor Phil Scott said at this point as far as his attitude towards these new proposed laws?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Phil Scott is a, I think, a thoughtful person, and he showed last year that he's not afraid to evolve on an issue when he learns more. And when the incident at Fairhaven was discovered, the plot in the making, he switched his opinion on various pieces of gun legislation and signed them. So he's smart this time around. He's not saying no to anything, but he is saying that he thinks what we did last year was a lot for the state to absorb, and that's true enough. But with that said, the fact that you tighten some of the country's worst and weakest gun laws one year shouldn't mean that you don't tighten another piece that's badly in need of it the next year.
We have a caller on the line. Mark is calling from Middlesex. Mark, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Yeah, thank you. I grew up in the 60s, and, you know, I grew up in central South Jersey, and we used to bring our guns to school. 22s, you know, after school, we'd go out in the Oaks and go get dinner. You know, I mean, my father trapped for a living until he was, you know, had three kids. What I'd like to hear more about is the cultural changes rather than the guns. The guns have pretty much stayed the same. I don't believe you keep hearing weapon. It's a gun is not a weapon. It's a firearm. It's a tool. And that's how we were brought up. To treat it as a tool it is. And, excuse me, we did have to lean the guns outside of the school. You know, they had a place, you know, stick them there, and it's fine. But, I mean, a ballpoint pen is a weapon. Baseball bat is a weapon, potential.
Okay. Thanks for your question, and I think that's, I think that's probably a view that a lot of people have, old-timers who've grown up around guns. Senator Philbert Ruth, what's your response?
Well, it's probably, my parents would kill me for saying this, but when I was a kid, they used to ride us around smoking in the car with the windows up. Nobody wore seat belts, and it was considered fine to have three or four drinks, in fact, to have a thermos in the car if we were on a trip. Where my mom and dad would drink in the car, and it was a thing that was not exactly legal, but the culture was such that people were like, "Well, it's a good time. Why should we have the kids in seatbelts? Because they'll cry. Let's just everybody go along and sort of repress the dangers that are involved here." Then, as 30 or 40 years have gone by, we've examined all of those things and said, wait a second, people die without seatbelts, people die from smoking, and people die from drinking while they're driving. So the culture has changed, but not because anybody was trying to cause harm to America, but because we got to look at some hard data on all of those things. And unfortunately, the same is true with suicide. Vermont has a 35% higher suicide rate, and it is because people have easy access to the tool that the caller was talking about, the tool that can kill you if you hold it up to your head and pull the trigger. So I hate to say it, but I'm going to have to go, David, because
That's fine.
I'm skipping my committee to speak with you.
Okay, well, Senator Philbert Ruth, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
We're going to bring in Clay Lasher Summers. She is the executive director of Gun Sense Vermont. Clay, you probably heard that caller, the whole issue of gun culture. We're different here in Vermont. Guns are part of the culture. How do you respond to that? I'm sure that's a question you've heard as well.
Yeah, well, I understand that. culture. I grew up in that culture. And we just live in a different time now, where the amount of firearms that we have in this country outnumber the amount of people that we have. So I believe that it's the access to the firearms that's really the problem. I understand, you know, fully growing up when guns were brought to school because people would go hunting afterwards. But our country has changed, and it's not, that's not really the way that we live anymore. Maybe I wish it was. But I work in rural New Hampshire and Vermont, rural New York, and I've seen over the past 30 years what has happened with the availability of firearms.
You also have personal experience of gun violence. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. When I was 13 years old, I was shot by my stepfather. We lived in a household where domestic violence was present, and firearms were present. And one night, I was shot with a .30-odd stick and almost died. So I have...
Because your father was angry at you. He was intending to shoot you.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, he was, he had access to a firearm, and that is, in domestic violence households, often, most of the time, what is used to use power over women and children.
What do you believe is the opportunity in 2019 now with the landscape for winning passage of gun safety legislation? It has changed, and largely due to young people who have demanded change and are refusing to accept as an answer that, well, this is the way it's always been, you can't do that. What do you see as the next frontier here in Vermont for gun safety?
Well, I think that last session, we passed bills that were a really good foundation to making Vermont people safer. They're being passed across the country. And now it's time this session to add a waiting period and a safe storage bill, because that's one more level of protection. If somebody has to wait 72 or 48 hours between having a background check and being able to buy a weapon, it's not only crucial to someone who may decide to take their life by gun, but it's also very important in domestic violence households. And safe storage, to me, is just like the seatbelt. I mean, safe storage, having guns locked, is common sense to me. And I think that most gun owners that I know that these two things are just about gun responsibility. It's about being responsible about guns. And having IRPO has been really helpful, and Senator Sears has put forth...
What is IRPO?
I'm sorry, Extreme Risk Protection Order. One of the things that we really need is to, after a bill is passed, is to be able to look at the statistics about how many times it's used, has it been, you know, useful, do people know how to access the bill? So these are the things that I think going forward are really important.
Let me ask, we still have Dr. Rebecca Bell in the studio. Dr. Bell, what would a waiting period do in the cases that you've dealt with in the emergency room?
Well, it would have less of an impact on my specific patient population because of the age limit for purchasing firearms is now 21. I take care of young people up to age 18. But there are still exceptions in Vermont, so young people who have taken a hunter safety course can still purchase a firearm. The background of this is what we talked about earlier, and that is the impulsive nature of suicide. And and especially among young people. And this really goes into the 20s, you know, impulsivity we see, especially in young men, up through their 20s. Some of the papers even include up into the early 30s in terms of categorizing impulsive suicide attempts, giving a cooling off period for people when they purchase firearms. We do believe, you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to look at in a robust way in terms of looking at the data. But based on what we know about the characteristics of impulsive suicide, we believe that it would decrease suicide deaths in Vermont and save some lives.
Clay Lasher Summers from Gun Sense Vermont. This issue, I don't have to tell you, is one that generates a tremendous amount of heat and emotion here right. in Vermont. You've had plenty of experience dealing with people who disagree with you. What makes a difference? What breaks through the smoke that surrounds the issue of guns that you have found enables you to talk and be heard by people who perhaps disagree with you at the start?
Well, I think conversation is the biggest thing that we need to strive for.
Clay, let me ask you, I don't know if you're on speakerphone, but if so, if you take it off and just use the handset, it's a little hard to hear
you. Yep, I'm good. Sorry. Okay. I think that conversation is really the most important thing that we can do. And for Gun Sense Vermont and myself, we really would like to just go around to community groups and have open dialogue. I understand that people who have thought they have one way of life in Vermont, and they feel that perhaps this is challenging that. When you get in the same room and you have discussions, what we're talking about is gun safety. And we're not talking about black helicopters coming to take your gun away. And we're not talking about a gun registration. We're talking about basic common sense policy and bills that will help keep people safer.
Now, people will often say, you know, this is the camel putting the proverbial nose under the tent. They're just going to charge in. You open that door and it's, so how do you answer that?
It's hard to answer it at times if you're in a public place and somebody's yelling at you, but I think we have done nothing. If they look at the bills, nothing has changed for their lives. If you can get a license to drive a car, and if you can pass a background check, you can purchase a gun. There may be a few steps in between that may make it, maybe take a little longer than before, but you can still purchase your gun.
Now, I know that you work in the area of domestic violence, as you mentioned, in a variety of rural areas in New York, Vermont, New Hampshire. What have you heard in terms of what difference have the new laws in Vermont made? Have you heard anecdotally from people about that?
I really haven't yet, because I just haven't heard anecdotally what any specific instance where, you know, somebody has said, well, this person not being able to have a gun has really helped, because unfortunately there's still many guns in the houses. And when I have talked to people, the shelter directors in Vermont, guns being, even if not fired, but being used as a threat is still, that just happens all the time.
Now, what do we know about states with gun safety laws and domestic violence, gun-related domestic violence?
States that have good gun safety bills and bills that speak to being able to take a gun at a house where there's a restraining order, is that those states are safer. States that it's a basic, you know, the data is there. States that have good gun safety laws have much fewer incidents of mass shootings, shootings at, you know, places of worship, theaters, and women are safer.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce farmers can't sell. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, community, and economy. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And by Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and